Welcome back. Just a couple of announcements before we get going. This is due to finish at 10 p.m. tonight. Before we close the meeting tonight, we will be practicing a seventh tradition. We are fully self-supporting. We decline outside contributions. Outside contributions, we cannot accept contributions from anyone who is not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We just want to try and operate within the traditions here. So if you're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, we won't accept your contribution, however grateful we are that you do it. But Alcoholics, dig deep. Okay. So, good. Just a reminder, emergency exit to the right, to the left, and we finish at 10. So with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our second speaker, also all the way from Texas. Could you please, everybody, give a warm welcome to Myers R.
This standing above somebody is the freakiest thing in the whole wide world. It's just not natural. I don't know. I just kind of... Hi, everybody. My name is Myers Raymer, and I am an alcoholic. And it's a pleasure to be here. One fast correction. You guys may be here until 10 o'clock. I won't be. We'll be done quicker than that. Mainly because we're going to be spending a good bit of time together tomorrow, and I see some of you already kind of rubbing your butts, and we just got here. So a lot of what we are going to talk about, we're going to talk about tomorrow. And so basically, I just want to kind of grease the skids a little bit. We'll try to get an idea about what we're going to do tomorrow and that sort of thing. I don't think that there should be any doubt who the evil twin is. They flew us 4,000 miles here so Chris could talk about somebody sticking a garden hose up his butt. That's evil. Holy shit. I was talking to Peter earlier, and I said, you know, for a lot of years, out of some weird Texas arrogance, I couldn't understand why anybody would live anywhere but Texas. It's just weird Texas stuff. And then I get off the plane, and I look around, and I'm driving through these foothills of the Alps, and I'm looking around at this town, and I go, oh crap, that's why they live here. It's just like, oh, my gosh, it's just... amazing. Is there anything that won't grow here? Being the weird old guy from Texas, I kept thinking what pot would do like here. Couldn't you grow pot big here? I mean, it's like everything else grows good. God. It's a weird deal. I want to thank Chris for doing the deal. Chris saved my life twice in AA. He saved my life 20 years ago when he 12-stepped me and took me to my very first AA meeting, which was the most bizarre thing in the world for me. And then 7 years later, he would save my life again when I was dying of untreated alcoholism, sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just simply dying. And Chris recognized it for what it is when I would call him and say, by now he's moved to the hill country. But when I would talk to him, he'd go, geez, you just a fruitcake. You sound terrible. It was true, and I was simply dying. And we'll talk a little bit about that because I want you to get a kind of an understanding. It's a funny thing. Chris struggled mightily to get here, and once I got here, I loved it immediately. I didn't have any trouble staying. I just, for a while, until things got really strange in AA, and a lot of this stuff was my fault. There was a time when I used to say it was all AA's fault that I was having such a hard time, but it wasn't. It was just a lot of the stuff that I decided I wasn't going to do that I probably should have done, and that caused some problems. My home group is in Dallas, Texas, the primary purpose group of Dallas, Texas, and it's just sort of a bunch of big old, you know, on a Tuesday night, there'll be 200 of us there studying the big book. We have no discussion meetings. We have no, frankly, I don't give a rat's what your day was like. It was simply, we're just there to study the literature. And it's an amazing thing to watch 200 people all study in the literature at one place and at one time. There is a sense of power and of unity in the room that you just have to witness. You just have to see it. It's a cool deal. I got to tell you, Peter and Simon came to Dallas I guess it was last year or the year before. I get it confused. I guess it was last year. And after the meeting, this is their first Tuesday night meeting when they're there. And after the meeting, they're just kind of standing there looking around. They looked like they had been bitch slapped. I said, "Peter, what's up?" He said, "I've never seen anything like this." And I said, "I know. I feel the same way every time I'm here. Every meeting, I feel the same." So, it's a cool deal. I did grow up in an alcoholic home. My dad was a drunk, and the evil twin Chris was my go-to guy. Chris was my guy. Every one of you guys got one of these. Chris was my guy that I always looked at and I'd go, if I drink like him, I'll quit. But I'm good to go until I get that bad. You see, he was always my sort of barometer of the deal. Oh my God. Little did I know what was heading this direction. And my life as a drunk is fairly pathetic. It's not flowery, and there's not a lot of drama in it, except that I just became more and more withdrawn, more and more. At the end of my drinking, my world is my garage or my kitchen. I'm in there cooking or trying to cook something, or I'm out in the garage hiding out trying to find something to drink. I can't go anywhere sober. I can't do anything sober. You can just imagine. Chris moved in, and so we've got two active alcoholics in the house, and my wife that's at work still trying to hold our business together, and this little 3-year-old daughter. It was just if you can imagine. He said, I'd come home, put her in front of the TV set, we'd go in the kitchen, get drunk, figure out how to solve all the world's problems, and there it would be, day after day after day. Chris introduces me to the joys of outside issues, if you catch my drift, and things sort of sped up, and it just kind of was wheels off in no time at all. I mean, I went from being functioning alcoholic, fairly holding it together. The fact that I stank like a pig and I couldn't work past 1 o'clock in the afternoon was beside the point. But if it hadn't been for my wife and her ability to run that business better than me, we'd have lost it. We'd have lost everything, you see. Not much has changed today. She still holds it together. So imagine, if you will, I think you've seen me in this coat. It's sharp. It's gone. I just can't do this. I'll have me in that coat soaking wet. So imagine, if you will, it finally gets ugly enough. Chris sobers up in November of 87. And I sobered up 2 months later. And it's like they talk about this thing being a program of attraction rather than promotion. And Chris, in those 2 months, never promoted anything. He never said, "You need this." He never said, "Why don't you come to a meeting with me?" He never said. What he did was he lived a sober life as an alcoholic who was on a path to recovery, doing what he was supposed to do. And buddy, it was an amazing. He could have stuck neon signs in his butt and walked around my house and not been more obvious. It was like, oh my gosh, who is this Who is this guy? He's getting up early in the morning. He's going to work at this bindery, which is a physical job. It's a hard job, and he's doing that all day long. And then he's going to a meeting at 6:30, and then he's doing his AA stuff. And then I'll be dang if most nights he doesn't come back to work. Hits a couple hours at work at night and goes home, and just he's doing the things that we're supposed to do. And I'm still just loaded like a big dog. So we're down there one night, and I'm lurking back in the shadows like some pervert, and he's over there working. And I'm just watching him work. And it had such a profound effect on me that here was this fruitcake. Here was this knife-throwing maniac of a man. I cleaned it up some. He's sober and doing what he's supposed to do. And I remember going home that night, and my wife was there, and I said, "Yeah, I don't know who that was down there tonight, but it's not the brother that I remember. But if there's any way that I can stop, I'm going to go tomorrow." And he did. It was a Friday, and he took me to my first AA meeting, and it was the coolest thing in the world. Just the coolest. And I walked in and fell in love with it immediately. This big old long shotgun room, all full of smoke and people, and it was just it was great. And it stayed great for a good bit of time. And it's an interesting thing. I am proof positive that just showing up may keep you clear of the booze and the other stuff for a little while. You can. I've seen people do it. I did it. It's like people say, well, you make it sound like everything we're doing today is bad. I said, no, I'm not. The problem I run into is that the stuff that we do in AA sometimes has no longevity to it. Because at some point in time, spiritually, we began to get sick again, the stuff that Chris was talking about. And that's what began to happen. At about 3 years sober, I have a sponsor, but that's a friend, and we're not really doing any step type stuff. You know the deal. We're just buddies. We just hang together. And so I'm not getting any better, really. I'm not drinking. But the weird part about this stuff is that if you can imagine how devastating it is to be 3 years from your last drink, and all of a sudden I'm starting to kind of be irritated with everybody. Okay, I'll tell you the truth. I hated your guts. I didn't like you, and I didn't like the people sitting in the meeting. I'm starting to spend more money than I make. I'm getting fast with a checkbook. Every woman seems to be prettier. You see what I'm saying? It's just this kind of weird goofiness. I'm starting to get real physical. I'm starting to push my kid around. We've had another baby by then, and I'm just not comfortable in my own skin. And I'm writing it off to, well, I'm just working too much, or I'm just doing this. I got 1,000 reasons why I'm goofy. And I'm thinking, recognizing it is enough. I'll be okay. I'll be able to just simply not do it. So I get me some self-help books, and I get me a bunch of other stuff, and I'm just... And it's getting worse. And it's getting worse. And I'm going to a bunch of meetings, and it's still worse. And I'm just... Any of you guys ever leave an AA meeting feeling worse than you did when you got there? Well, yeah, most of us have. And what a shame that happens. And yet that was happening to me all the time. Almost every meeting I would leave angry at something, and everything you said offended me, and it was just my spiritual condition was something that I just was not able to deal with. Emotionally, I'm coming apart at the seams. I'm getting real loud in meetings and stuff. Never occurred to me that it might be a program that I'm missing. Thought never occurred to me, because everybody that I'm sitting in these meetings with are telling me meeting makers make it. If you're having problems, you just need to go to some more meetings. And I heeded it and did it. And then I wonder why I'm so fearful. I'm so fearful because it's not working. I'm getting scareder now. Because now, I don't want to drink, guys. It's not that I'm starting to think about the drink again, but I don't want to drink. I honestly am done with the drink. The weird thing got added into the deal that never was there before. In all those years that I drank, I never thought about killing myself. And now I'm 5-6 years sober. And that's all I can think about, is getting clear of this internal condition which is killing me. You see? I can only imagine what my poor wife was going through. I can only imagine what my family, I mean, they must have been looking at me going like, what the heck is going on here? You're supposed to be getting better. You're supposed to be a spiritual giant going to all these meetings. I'm not. So, Chris by now has moved and gone to the hill country, and it just wheels off in a short order. I got in some trouble, and I couldn't keep my hands off other people. I'm getting real physical with them. I'm wanting to push them around a lot. I'm getting real loud with people. You think I'm loud now? You should have seen me drunk. And I just so I'm in this situation where I'm now almost 7 years sober, and I can't stand anything in AA. And so I started saying something at a meeting one night. I just was basically going to say goodbye to everybody that I knew, and I started talking to him, and this guy interrupted me, a guy named Jim. I'd kill him today if I could find him, but I gotta get clear of this, and it's killing me, and I know I'm not gonna make it, but I wanted to just say. And he interrupts me, and he says, Myers, but I know what you're saying, and we all feel your pain, buddy. And the trick always has been and always will be in the meeting. You're just simply not going to enough meetings. I'm going to 6 meetings a week now, guys. How many meetings does it take to get clear of this feeling inside? How many? I go out and sit in my old Toyota Land Cruiser's parked out there on the road, and I just crawled in that seat of that dang Land Cruiser and just put my head down on the steering wheel, and I just wept like a kid. I just couldn't. What am I going to do? I don't want to drink, but if I don't do something, I'm going to die. One night I almost did drink. It scared me to death, and I called Chris, and I said, hey, I'm in real trouble. And it's like, he goes, I've been telling you for years now. to get clear of that group where you are. See, I bought into the idea that if it's a circle and triangle on the door, God's in the room and everything is warm and fuzzy and the solution is there. And guys, I believe, truly believe that at one time that was true. But it's weird how it may not be that way here. But there are certain places in the States where it's gotten so convoluted and weird, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. Not to beat it up, but I just want you to know kind of where I'm coming from on it. Some of that's just so strange what's going on. And so I just... He says, I'm going to be in Dallas in a couple of days. Don't do anything stupid. I'm going to scoop you up. There's an old man there I want you to meet. And we're supposed to see him, and I bet you he's got a solution. And so, true to his word, he's there. He and Mark H. is with Chris, and they go to this meeting. And Chris calls me the next morning, and he's like on fire. He's going, you ain't going to believe this old guy. You got to go meet this guy. And I went, well, God, Chris, you know, I'm so busy right now, and I got all this stuff going on like this. And Chris is just looking at the phone going, I don't believe this. 48 hours ago, you're ready to kill yourself. You can't live like you're living, and you've already come up with an excuse why you can't go see this man who knows what to do. All right, I'll go see him. And I did. And I went over there, and so, you guys have heard these stories like this, but I just, you have to picture the situation. How can I be so full of arrogance? I'm a dead man walking, and I'm still making excuses why I can't do what this old guy says. So I open the door, and there's this crusty old man standing there, and he's got this little dog down there, yep, yep, yapping, and he looks at me, and he looks at my hands, and he looks back at my face, and he says, where's your big book? And I'm thinking, that's the oddest thing anybody could... He didn't say, hi, my name is Cliff Bishop, I love you, and welcome, welcome. He didn't say any of that stuff. He just said, where's your big book? I don't know, sir. And he handed me his book, and he says, here, we'll use this today, but don't ever come back over here again without a big book. And there's a part of me that's going, I love this man, and there's a part of me that's going, I could break this old fart over my knee. I mean, I'm so convoluted inside, there's this, you guys know already. So we go sit in his living room, and in 45 minutes, he picks up the book, and he tells me this stuff. And it's like, I don't understand. It's like he was talking French. I'm just going, whoa, stop. What did you just say? And he keeps, where is that? And I just don't know what he's talking about. It does not ring, it doesn't ring true because I've never heard this stuff. If he had told me about his inability to deal with his employer, I would have been at home with what he's talking about. If we were going to talk about some inner child stuff, I would have been at home in the conversation. I could have added my 2 cents about his inner child. We had worlds to talk about. But he's talking about a spiritual set of principles that I knew little about other than just reading it off the wall. I didn't know what he was talking about. I bet some of you have felt exactly the same way. I thought that he had the teacher's edition big book, and I just had the beginner edition, you see? And I kept looking over there at his book, and I'd look back at mine, and I'd look back over there like this. He's got the same book I've got. It's just, he just knows what he's talking about. And I'm so full of crap, and I just keep wanting to tell, I keep interrupting him. And I keep wanting to tell him what I know about AA. And he just goes, Myers, and he just shakes his head, and he says, son, I just don't know what I can do to help you. You're not going to shut up and listen. And it's obvious you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm taking offense. I'm getting all bowed up in a man's living room. I'm the one dying. He's the one happy. I used to think I was the only one with that kind of arrogance until I started sponsoring guys. The world is full of arrogant little pissants that know exactly what they're... Amazing. So... There began the journey, and it's like I'm standing as I'm saying goodbye to him. There's a part of me that's saying, so long, old fart, I'll never see you again. And there's another part of me that's going, I can't wait to get back in the same room with this old coot so I can learn some more about this book. He says, we have a meeting on Thursday night. We want you to come. And it's a haul from where this meeting is to where I live. I pass 5 AA clubs to get to that meeting. And so I do. And what transpires, guys, is a deal of about a 10-week period of where every time I leave a meeting, we have two meetings a week, and they're both big book studies. And every meeting, I walk away going, I'm not believing this. I'm not believing what I learned tonight. And I call Chris, who's down in Kerrville, down in the Hill Country, and I'll call him. I go, hey, Chris, do you know how long it took Bill Wilson to work the work? And I'm giving him all this stuff, and Chris could have laughed at me. He could have said, yeah, stupid, I've known that for a long time. But he didn't do any of that. He just went, yep, I know. Isn't it pretty cool? And then Thursday night after the meeting, Friday morning, I'd call Chris again. I said, Chris, you're not going to believe this. Do you realize that we can actually recover from this stupid disease? He'd go, no, get out of here. Can we really? And I would start this deal. And it begins to kind of open up and things begin to change. And we're going to talk about some of that stuff this weekend. It's important. You guys ever hear of something called the oral tradition? The oral tradition is, I'm going to say something to you, and then you're going to say something to somebody else. And in families, it's kind of fun because, you know, some old coot way up the lineage says something, and he passes it down to an aunt passes it to somebody else. And that's how you get a lot of your history and stuff. And it's a pretty cool deal. The trick is that when we're passing a message like how to recover, it becomes a little trickier. Because we've spent years trying to improve the big book, you see. So we got a clear-cut set of directions, 70 years ago, and then we're going to spend the next 70 years trying to improve on what they did. We're farther along down the line. We're smarter. We've got all the science to involve. And so we add a bunch of stuff. The trick is that most of us have gotten to a place where we don't know the truth from what's opinion. And part of this weekend is the idea of going back and looking at what's truth and what's opinion. What's just somebody's great idea that may... And you know what, guys? In all of these years, nobody ever gave me a piece of information that they meant as a piece of malice. Nobody ever said anything being mean. They didn't say, hey, when Meyer shows up, we're going to really screw that little bastard up. We're going to get him, okay? We're going to tell him this, and then we're going to sit back and laugh. They didn't do that. They shared a lot of opinion that came straight from the heart, and they meant as much love as they could pour into it. The trick is that a lot of the things that they gave me, I was too lazy to see if it was truth based on what the text said, you see. And so what I ended up with was a head full of a bunch of well-meaning opinion that would later sort of turn and cut me to ribbons because it didn't have the power to cure my alcoholism. It had the power to make me look like a stud in AA. It had the power to make me look like I knew what I was doing. But it didn't have the power to heal. And that was dangerous. It was like those old post office or whatever, or telephone, those games, parlor games we used to play with kids like this. And I'd start talking to Simon, and Simon would whisper to Chris, and Chris would whisper to this gentleman back over here. And by the time it got over here, it's already changed a whole bunch, remember? And we used to think it was really funny. By the time it got back over there, it didn't bear any resemblance at all to the truth. And that's what's happened over the last, especially the last 35 or 40 years in AA, because there's so many good ideas out there, you see? It's a funny thing. Most of us that have been sober for a little while, we can take it and we can see, oh, that sounds like rubbish. Because that's what it is. It was opinion, but it's still not our text. But the brand new guy, have you ever stopped and think what it's like to be brand new sober and walk in and sit in these meetings and hear some lady talking about how she stayed sober just doing yoga? I love yoga. I'm not knocking a bit of it. I practiced it for years. But the new guy is sitting there going, let's see, she practiced yoga. Let's see, she got married. See, he did this, and we all have different ways of getting there. And we all want to share how we got there. And for the brand new guy, it's just flat confusing. And so it's no wonder that we began to pick up strange ideas. I want to read you something. I think you'll get a kick out of this. Some of you won't, but some of you will. This was an interesting deal. This is why I'm so empathetic. This is why I can relate to so many people who are in AA trying to do the best they can, but because of the nature of the meeting that they're in, they're not getting what they need to get. And I'm so empathetic with those guys. I love them to death because I know how hard it is to see the truth sometimes. There was a cat named Bob Bacon, who was a delegate in the United States who wrote us an article. It was actually a transcript of a talk that he had done at a big delegate meeting in the States. This was written in 1976. And Bob's talk was pretty earth-shattering, because what he was doing, he was talking about things that we were talking about in AA that maybe we shouldn't be talking about. Was the newcomer getting an accurate representation of what was in the literature? And the premise of his talk was is that we had strayed outside the lines and we'd gotten things goofy and people weren't recovering. He was looking at a broad spectrum of people coming and few people staying. Now, that's been exacerbated. That's worse now than it was in 76. But it's interesting that he picked up on it to the extent that he thought that he had to do this talk in front of all these people. And one of the things that I found truly interesting in there was an excerpt. It was a quote from a talk that Dr. Bob had done. So Dr. Bob said this: "We hear a lot of ridiculous things, like there are no musts in AA. Now, my big book read different. People say that it's an individual program, that we can take the steps any way we want to. There is no such thing as an individual interpretation of the 12 steps. Okay. Dr. Bob, one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, just told us that there was no such thing as a personal interpretation of the 12 steps. He didn't say that our experiences were all going to be the same, because you know they're not. Our experiences, once we have that experience, are unique and different, and it's what makes this thing, the fabric of this thing, so cool. But what I want you to do is remember what he just said, and I want you to listen to this, and I always... You guys have the grapevine here, the little newsletter thing that comes out like that from NAA. This was supposed to be the meeting in print for Alcoholics Anonymous in the United States. And it said, this was their a little statement that they made. "The awareness that every AA member has an individual way of working the program permeates the pages of the grapevine. And throughout its history, the magazine has been a forum for the varied and often divergent opinions of AAs around the world." Okay, let me make sure that everybody understands what we just... This is the reason why this thing gets so wheels off, why we stay in so much trouble in AA land, is that we have a co-founder telling us that there's no such thing as a personal interpretation of these spiritual principles, that they're made to be worked a certain way. And here's the grapevine telling me that we can work it any way we want to. And they're going to aid in it. They're going to help it by reporting every goofy, bizarre idea that comes down the pike. If you can put it in print, they print it. In the guise of being, I don't know. We're not going to talk about it this weekend, but sometime when we have a chance to just sit down and talk, I want to tell you some stories of Chris and I dealing with people that love the grapevine. It blows me away. They get the greatest opportunity in mankind to share and carry a message of recovery worldwide, and they feel the need to explain and to broach every goofy idea that's out there. It's the craziest thing in the world. Instead of pulling everybody with a vision of what the big book told us at the beginning, it's just the craziest deal. So with that in mind, with that thought in mind, listen to this. Bill Wilson, by 1966, Bill is going crazy. They've got the traditions that already been adopted. And remember, in those days, there's no email stuff going on. Everything that comes to Bill's coming either through the telephone or through a letter. But everything's still coming through Bill. The good, the bad, and the ugly. If you're having trouble in a group, it still comes through Bill. If it's a success story, Bill gets it. But what he's seeing, because he's there at the bottom part of the funnel, he's seeing everything that's coming in, and what he's caught off guard with is that everything in AA is changing. All of these people are coming in with all kinds of weird ideas, and it seems to be totally wheels off. There seems to be nothing guiding this set of spiritual principles. And so he wrote a series of articles, and one of these articles was printed, and it's called Whose Responsibility? It's three short paragraphs. "An AA group, as such, cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone those of non-alcoholics in the world around us. The AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone." Okay, guys, let me break part of this down real quick. How many meetings have we set into where we tried to be a mediator in somebody's domestic problem in the meeting? 1,000? I bet I sat in 10,000 meetings that were like that, where we were just hoping somebody would share some somebody took a poke at somebody's wife, and we're going to spend the whole meeting trying to get this guy in line about how he needs to deal with this domestic problem. Maybe y'all don't hear, but we sure do it in Texas. Now, though a member may sometimes be helped in such matters by his friends in AA, the primary responsibility for the solution of all of his problems of living and growing rests squarely upon the individual himself. Now, should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. He's seeing it, and here it is, the crux of it. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of the group. If we don't stick to this cardinal principle, we shall almost certainly collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. You see what I'm saying, guys? What Bill is seeing in this thing, he laid it out real clear. The teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps is the sole purpose of the group. We're not there for any other reason. That came from Bill Wilson. We were there to teach what the big book said about the 12 steps. Gather the new guys up, help them do their stuff, this sort of thing. In the nature of the discussion meeting that we have today, guys, and I'm not knocking this stuff at all. There's not anybody in here, including me, that hadn't sat in a nice, warm, and fuzzy discussion meeting and left feeling wonderful. You have too. I know you have. But how many times have you left because things got wheels off and nobody ever said anything? Most of us have. You see? I want to paint a fast picture. We're almost done, guys. I know you're getting tired. Let me paint this picture of you. And just I want you to just picture in your mind's eye of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that you've sat in before. So you go to this meeting. You hear there's some guys there that have some solution. And you go in and you find out that the chairperson, a knowledgeable guy, has a topic picked out. We're going to talk about step one. I'm hip. I'm excited. Guess what? There are two brand new guys, a man and a woman, brand new, sitting in the meeting. One's never been to AA before. One relapsed after just a little piece, and he's desperate for a solution. This is getting good. Chairman does a little share, does a little talk, takes about 5 minutes, and he knocks it out of the ballpark. He's dead on. Everybody in the room, there's 30 of us sitting there, and everybody in the room slides forward in their chair. We're sitting right on the edge of the chair. Everybody's excited. The new little guy sitting there like this with his eyes kind of opening up, looking around, going, holy cow, I think I might understand this thing. Everybody's excited. The next guy, this gal, she steps up like this. She does her little share. Knocks it out of the ballpark. She's just so dead on with the step. These little guys are they're vibrating. They're so exciting. And everybody else in the room is excited. Everybody else feels the power of a loving God in the room. You can feel it moving. And then we have this little guy in the back. He's been sitting back there the whole meeting like this. Hi, my name is Tim. Hi, Tim. Everybody knows what's coming because Tim doesn't work the steps. Tim doesn't know anything about the steps. Tim's been around for about 10 years, and Tim just had a divorce a year ago, and that's all he wants to talk about. So Tim goes, I know the topic is step one, I think. See, he's not even listening. But I really feel the need to share about my divorce. And guys, I'm telling you, you've been in the meeting. You'll watch 30 butts go and slide back in that seat. And about 10 of them will put their head down on the table because you know what's coming. Now listen, I'm not making light of Tim's predicament. I love Tim. I want the very best for Tim. If I was Tim's sponsor, we'd have a spankathon after that meeting. We would. And I would say, Tim, when you feel this way, you need to come see me as your sponsor. I understand you better than anybody in this room. And you need to share that with me. And we're going to get you back in the literature and find you a solution to what's been kicking your butt. Because I think it's selfishness and self-centeredness, but you will too tomorrow, I promise you. You see what I'm saying like this, guys? And this is the interesting thing. When I first got to Primary Purpose Group from this other group, I was so used to that kind of stuff. We're going to spend a great deal of time trying to fix external circumstances, your divorce, your new relationship, your new job. We're going to try working on those external stuff to stay sober, and we're going to ignore this program of action called the 12 Steps that guaranteed our happiness. This is what we ignore. That's the reason why we have so many people coming and so many people becoming disgruntled and dissatisfied with the meetings that they set into. Because it is, we've painted it as a therapy session to try to help you with your day, but that's not what our literature said. That's not what my experience bears out, but that's where it is nonetheless. Again, it may not be like that here, but in Texas and in most of the places that I've traveled, AA has gotten so wheels off, guys. It's just, there are places in Texas where they will not even let you carry a big book into a meeting. If they see you walking out of your car, they'll say, they'll stand out in the parking lot and they say, "What's that?" And you go, "It's a big book." And you go, "You can't bring it in. We don't use the big book in this meeting." It's an AA meeting, but they're not going to use the big book, okay? You should have been there the night they told me to put my big book back. He said, "What's that?" I said, "It's a big book." And he said, "You can't." I said, "Watch me, Dick." And I walked in. That wasn't very spiritual. And now the taping world is going to know that you aren't either. It's like, there are places in the States where they're charging money to hear Fifth Steps. What? Charging money to hear Fifth Steps, yeah. Somebody asked me one time, said, "Well, I don't understand how that works. How much do they charge?" And the answer, as it was laid out to me, how good a Fifth Step do you want? You see what I'm saying? Do you see why I get so goofy about the idea? It's like we want desperately for this fellowship to stay strong so that we can all be here and recover, and yet out of love and tolerance, we're going to let Tim share and ruin a good meeting. We're going to let these people do crazy, goofy things in the eyes of love and tolerance. And I understand that, but I just think that the question that always rises to the surface of my consciousness when I think about that story about Tim and that meeting that night is this thing. Where is it? Where is it that Tim's right to destroy a meeting was greater than those two new people to hear the truth about our precious program? Where did that happen? You see, it's time as a fellowship that we simply grew some bigger backbones and stepped up to the plate. And the only way I know to do that, guys, is to learn what's in the literature so that we're not free-floating in a quagmire of warm and fuzzy things that we say in meetings. Somebody asked me one time, he said, "Well, what I would suggest to you, Myers," this is right after I got over there, "what I would suggest is that perhaps you simply set down on the floor everything you think you know about AA. Would you be willing to do that?" And frankly, I wasn't. I'd spent a bunch of years learning this stuff, and I wasn't really ready to throw it away. He said, "I'm not saying you've got to throw it away. I'm just saying, could you possibly consider simply setting everything down, reinvestigating it, looking at it again, and then determining, is this doctrine right out of the literature, or is it just a piece of opinion that you picked up someplace?" And I said, "Well, I could do that. I could do that." And it's a funny thing, guys. If you've never done it, it's the most freeing thing in the world, because you'll start to say something and you went, "Wait a minute, that's one of those opinion things. Maybe I better not share that here. Let's go to something that I know is out of the literature." And you go back to the book, and what you find is that the fellowship that you crave grows up around you, and you've got all these people that are getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're beginning to see the power of a group as it gets really, really healthy. From a mental health standpoint, the depression seems to go away, the goofiness seems to go away, the spiritual malaise that dogs us, the feeling of being disconnected from God and everybody else goes away. If I could figure a way to talk that into happening in my life before, I would have done that. You see, the stuff that Chris was talking about, love didn't do it. If love could have got me sober, my wife would have got me sober, and my mama would have got me sober. But the reality is that it didn't. You can't love somebody enough. You can love them enough to let them drink until they hit wherever it is that they need to hit, until they're willing to say, "I'm done. Time out. What do I got to do?" You see? So that there are no lurking notions that maybe I could do this another way. Is it hard to do? Yeah. But we're going to talk about it some this weekend. There's a way to do that lovingly. There's a way to do that without coming across as a big old jerk. There is. One last thing and then we're done for tonight. Over the years, through our website and through the stuff that we've talked about in our meetings, There have been an uprising of people that have gotten excited about the idea of studying the book again. Worldwide. It's the darndest thing you've ever seen in your life. It was always my hope that everybody that came to AA in other countries would pick up the best that AA had to offer and run with it. And what happened in most places, not every place, but in most places, they picked up the worst we had to offer, which was the nonstop, wheels-off, open discussion meeting. That's what they picked up. And they ignored the rest of it. To the extent that in some places, if there's anything like a book study, they're going to shut you down. Shut you down. Now, remember this is all about unity. And the one thing that I want you to remember now and always, 10, 20 years from now, I want you to remember what I'm saying, please. At the end of the day, this is about unity. We're not trying to step on our brothers and sisters in this fellowship that may not be doing this the way we're doing this. What we're trying to do is bring people along with a vision of how absolutely exciting this thing can be, how absolutely mesmerizing it could be to find that there is something out there bigger than us that could fix this deadly disease and that could solve all the other problems in my life, my inability to get a job, my inability to get a relationship, my inability to just be a kind man. You see, it's just, but we have to do it gently and we have to do it with as much kindness as we can muster. There is nothing I know of in AA that's more vile than a little big book thumper sitting in a meeting, whacking people up the side of the head with a big book. You see, cutting them to shreds like it's some kind of, let me ask you, what it does is it makes us who want to try to get everybody back in the literature as a baseline for their stuff. It makes us look like zealots. It makes us look stupid. Sometimes, I used to wonder why it is that people had such a problem with the big book. And I always wanted to look there. I always wanted to look at them. And what I began to realize was that, you know what? As a fellowship, as men and women who love the literature and who love the steps as they were handed to us, we have to look at ourselves and see how we're portraying the big book. Am I sitting in a meeting sharing the love and hope that this literature carries? Or am I sitting there like some sanctimonious boob beating people up, irritating people? It's not meaning that you have to change what you're saying, but maybe couch the way you say it. You see? The truth is still the truth, guys. It's still the truth. I don't want to squelch anybody's enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is the coolest thing we have in AA today. And in areas where people see what can happen from that enthusiasm, we're seeing these huge groundswells of people coming to the literature and staying sober. We're seeing it by the thousands of people doing that. 5 years ago, just 5 years ago, doing this was a bloodbath, an absolute bloodbath. I would get weepy every time I did it. I'd call Chris and I'd say, I ain't ever, ever standing at a podium again. Never. Because I'd get my head handed to me everywhere I went. And you know what? I still get my head handed to me because people won't listen sometimes or because they misunderstand what... I had some lady pull me off the podium one night. Pull me off the podium. And she had her finger right in my chest and she was just giving it this. And for about three times, I let her do it. And finally, I grabbed her wrist like this and I says, no more hitting, okay? We can talk, but no more hitting. And she starts into me about what I'd said. I went, whoa! Sister, time out. And she said she was in Fort Worth, Texas. She speaks Texan. She said, I heard when you said this, it pissed me off so bad. I said, whoa, stop. I didn't say that. Yes, you did. And you said this. I said, I didn't say that either. And there's a taper standing there. And the taper's watching the whole thing. And the taper walks up and says, here. He didn't say it. You probably need to listen to this again. You see what I'm saying? But let me finish the story. I also listened to the tape. And you know, I didn't say any of those things. But I had a tone in my voice that beat that poor woman up. You stupid. You cow. You don't know anything. That's what my voice said. I didn't say any of the things that she said. But I'm not surprised she heard it the way I said it. Okay? And so, if I came across like that to you guys tonight, forgive me. I didn't mean to, honest. I do get excited about what's in front of us. I do get excited about the prospect of people seeing the book, sometimes for the very first time. I sponsor a bunch of guys right now that are 15 to 25 years sober, and I'm amazed at how little they know about the literature. And as they learn it, their transformation is exactly like mine was at 7 years sober, sometimes more powerful. But to stand there and watch an AA icon that's been around goofy meetings sharing goofy stuff for 20 years stop and go, holy cow, I think I've been telling these people the wrong thing all these years. We should have been butt deep in the steps by now, shouldn't we? Uh-huh. God, how do we do that? Delighted you ask. Let's go do that, you see? And you will be amazed. In the morning, that's what we're going to start doing. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the steps as it pertains to sponsorship. Because the key to success in AA, the key to any kind of health in AA, is going to come through strong sponsorship. Not mean strong sponsorship, not rigid, unbendable, nasty sponsorship, but sponsorship that, the same way that Cliff Bishop loved me enough after knowing me for 10 minutes, that he put his arm around me and said, buddy, you simply do not know what you're talking about. Why don't we do this? Why don't we just try this? You see? I knew those guys in my own group for 7 years, and not one of them would tell me the truth. I used to resent that. I don't anymore. It was there for me to get if I just got off my butt and read the book, but I didn't do that. Cliff Bishop, in 10 minutes, taught me what love was about in Alcoholics Anonymous. He taught me that it was okay to tell somebody, hush, hush. Come see me after the meeting, brother. Come see me after the meeting, and we'll talk about this stuff. You see? And hopefully, this weekend, that's what we'll get a chance to do, is some of this stuff. And you might learn something. As always, I can guarantee I'll learn something. I've never done one of these things before that I haven't talked to one of you buckaroos, and you said something, and I went, holy, that makes perfect sense to me. Perfect sense. There's a lot of wisdom in this room, and I'm delighted to be here. I'll see you guys in the morning.